Hi, everybody. I'm Traven Rice, and I'm the co-founder and arts and culture editor of The Lowdown. This is the Lowdown Culture Cast, and we talk to culture changers of all types. And sometimes that means talking with people who might have been around for a long time, but are still here contributing to culture in wonderful ways and very important ways. And I'm really excited today to be speaking with the team from the film that just came out, Veselka, The Rainbow on the Corner at the Center of the World. I'm speaking with filmmaker Michael Fiore and the two leads of the documentary, not to mention owners of Veselka. Second, third generation?
Yes.
Yes. No small feat. So I'm here on Orchard Street at PNT Knitwear, and I want to hear all about this documentary. The owner, Tom Pritchard and son, also owner? Do you say co-owners or...?
I want to give him his proper credit. I mean, he's since retired, but he's still a conciliatory figure and advisor. But I'm third generation proprietor at the moment.
Okay, and that's Jason. Hi. Very nice to meet you guys. So I just saw the film, and it is screening right now, limited release in New York and L.A.
And New Jersey.
Excellent. So we want to encourage everybody to go out and see it. It's been extended here for another week, and we're hoping perhaps more.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And I want to hear about how this all came out. The film, it's a documentary about the restaurant. And if you don't know Veselka, it's a Ukrainian restaurant on 2nd Avenue and East 9th Street. Been here for many decades. It's very beloved by downtowners and Lower East Siders and people in the East Village. And when I first moved to New York, it was one of the very first spots I went and felt welcome and felt like, oh, I'm in New York and I'm a New Yorker now. And I know many people feel that way. And I know many people feel like I could go there by myself, I could go there at any time. It's just the spot that you would run into all different types of people. And it was an exciting kind of down-to-earth spot, and it still is. So that's what makes it really special, in my opinion. So I want to hear about the story. And now, obviously, it's always a cultivated community, this location. But with the war breaking out, there's even more community going on. So how did this idea start for the documentary?
So I went to NYU Film School, which neighbors Little Ukraine, and I've been going to the restaurant for over 20 years. I was introduced to Tom and Jason through mutual colleagues in November of 2021, and I knew the back of the menu, three-generation story, you know, the storefront being started by Tom's father-in-law, Jason's grandfather, Volodymyr Darmakwal. And it was a place of refuge for displaced Ukrainians after World War II. And I sat down with Tom and Jason in November to pitch really what's remained, which is a father-son theme story, kind of also dissecting the handoff of the business from Tom to Jason, and they were talking about doing a renovation. So it was a changing of the guard story and looking at the past.
When did you say that was? You
November of 2021.
2021.
So the war wasn't a glimmer in anybody's eye. And they liked the idea. Jason privately was telling me he really liked the idea, unbeknownst to Tom, because he wanted something that if this was going to happen, they would pay homage to Tom for all the years and, you know, sweat and love he put into creating the business as we know it today. Mm-hmm. And everybody kind of sat on it for a while, and then when the war started to percolate and you'd hear on the news that this could happen any day, I emailed Tom and Jason and said, you know, with how the business was started, if this war happens, there would be parallels that we should look at. And any business could tell their story at any time, but I felt like this was the time. And it goes beyond just doing like a cable cooking show or special. It was a deep dive into humanity and people and compassion and what makes Veselka Veselka. It goes beyond food. And they agreed, but we wanted to travel lightly and not just like dive in on day one of the war. So we kind of felt things out. And the first day we filmed was day 11 of the war, and that's act one of the movie.
Wow. I have to just mention that today actually is also kind of a dramatic day to be talking, as far as, you know, the funeral of Navalny. Oh, yes. I don't know, I just noticed that. So I just had to mention it. I was like, whoa, that's sort of powerful.
And this week as a whole, because the two-year commemoration of the war was last Saturday.
Yeah. So the New York Times review says that the film starts as a fun story about a New York institution, and its tone is resolutely hopeful and convivial, but it rapidly becomes a demonstration of a community's effort to support loved ones under siege, and that makes it much richer and fuller than it might otherwise have been. It does, that's exactly what it does, in my opinion. It starts out as this light, wonderful story about this amazing history and family business, and that has already created community. And I had no idea there were that many Ukrainians back then, by the way. Yeah. That's a lot in the neighborhood. But then what a roller coaster ride it goes on after that. And how has that been for you two as the business owners?
Maybe Tom can attest to the past history, but, you know, it's been a whirlwind since the invasion of Ukraine. But, you know, Tom has gone through so much in bringing the business to where it is today. So maybe he can attest to where it's been, and then I can follow up with where we've been the last 2 years.
Well, I would say my father-in-law, even in the very early days in the 60s, had a history of helping fellow Ukrainian immigrants. It seemed like there were always Polish and Ukrainian people coming into the neighborhood and looking for work. And he did his best to help them. We always had a rich staff of recent immigrants from Eastern Europe. So the groundwork was kind of set. Mm-hmm. And over the years, our valued employees, I've had the opportunity, the privilege of sponsoring them and helping them settle in America. It's a very, very complicated process, but so when the war started and we had an opportunity, the government made it much easier to bring people over and help them escape the war zone. So we had a history of doing that, and we continued.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think in the movie I won't give away too much. I mean, we've over the course of the years of being in business, we've had some key employees that we would help with their legal documents, and it was a handful, and it was a long process, costly. But with the recent invasion 2 years ago, the current administration created a program called United for Ukraine, and everything was done online. And as long as you can prove support and that you would account for whatever financial support for housing or a document saying that you would you would help this refugee, you know, come here with some backing, or, you know, and this is, it goes back to, you know, my grandfather when he arrived here in 1950 was supported by an American family. So I thought, what way better to, you know, when my staff came to me and said, can you help me? And they told me about this program, it became, you know, just a matter of fact, and making 10 applications, and 9 of those applications now working in the restaurant happily. I mean, this is not a forced labor camp. They're just happy to be here, happy to contribute. As you can see in the film, it's a social network. I mean, we're a happy family of sorts. I mean, an extended family. And I'd be remiss if I didn't say Mike has now become part of our family after documenting and being with us for over a year. So, I mean, that's the backstory. On.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Luckily, Michael, right? Yeah. I mean, it doesn't always go that way, does it?
I've been very fortunate, actually, in the two docs I've made, both groups of stories and subject matter and all the people, we've all become family. So maybe I'm just lucky. I don't know.
Mike definitely has that personality or to get the most out of people. I mean, he can tell you that one of the worst there's an adage of you don't film with, what'd you say? Don't film with babies. You don't film with animals. You don't film
on water.
On water, and you don't film in busy restaurants. But he got a lot out of people. I mean, I'm typically a very private person, and I can tell you my father is too. But, you know, when he was able to make us feel at ease to tell our story naturally and organically, and you meet my staff who normally don't speak, and Mike made, you know, it didn't feel like it was, you were on stage or anything. You know, had a very small crew, was very respectful of people's space and time. So it was a true project of love.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And did it, I mean, did it keep unfolding? Because you had an initial plan and then you realize, oh, the timing is really important probably right now. But how do you sort of navigate the scope? I mean, you're so embedded and like there with them and things keep happening. So how do you know?
So my dad is a retired orthopedic surgeon, and I grew up in a house where he was on call all the time. And I can compare the last 2 years to what it was like watching my dad. I was on call to Jason. I would tell him, we would talk on the phone. I'd be like, I'm yours all week. Just call me as soon as something pops up, because I couldn't be there every day. So it was the kind of thing where he would kind of let me know ahead of a week of like, oh, is the mayor coming? Or, you know, like that, just using that as an example.
Which he did, by the way.
Yes. But yeah, I would kind of get an idea of week to week. But then sometimes he'd call me the night before and say, oh my gosh, this is happening. Please come by tomorrow. And I'd have to call the crew and say, let's do this. We got to, you know, rally. But yeah, you know, it's just like writing anything. You do write a beat sheet when you start. And I had proposed like initial beats to them so that they felt comfortable. And then it evolves. And, you know, nobody thought the war was going to be, you know, 2 years plus. So, you know, in one of the drafts I did have, we would all go back, like the end of the movie was we were going to go back with Dima and Vitaly to a true free Ukraine again. And, you know, we would have food together as like this bigger family in Ukraine, and someday we will do it. It's just we didn't get to do it for the movie. But yeah, you kind of let life evolve. And, you know, there are nights where I didn't sleep because I would be concerned, like, is it all going to come together, or are all the dots going to connect? And somehow the movie telling gods were very good to me and gave me all the pieces I needed. So
I think we gave you some good casts.
Yeah.
Characters.
Yeah. No, it's true.
No, I know. It's been a...
Everybody's very distinct and interesting and different.
Oh, there's so many interesting characters. And it's, you know, I found it to be, as it unfolds, it becomes very heart-wrenching. I mean, very heart-wrenching in the sense of just how... much in crisis, you know, it is over there. And so many of the people who have come are, you know, from there, but also who are working have family there. And it's just, I don't know, how do you balance that kind of feeling in the, you know, all the time in the day to day?
As I mentioned in the movie, I wear many hats. I should have gone to college for psychology versus economics and finance, because in this business, you know, and the state of the time that we live in now, you know, the hospitality is not a glamorous industry to be in post-pandemic. And the generation, I don't know what generation we're in now, what they call themselves, Generation Z, it's all about me. And, you know, so you have to manage people's expectations and personalities. And then during this crisis, their mental health. Mm-hmm. And it's been a juggle, I got to be honest. But I unfortunately, my family's here safe. I have a successful family business, and I've tried to do my best to give back. And I know that these people, my staff and the Ukrainians, are suffering so much more. We take simple things for granted by walking out in the street and on a sunny day and enjoying the sun on our face and getting a cup of coffee without having to hear sirens or worrying that I got to run into a bunker. So yeah, I keep things in perspective. Yeah, I might have a bad day. Somebody cut me off, or a homeless man, you know, kicked me in the subway or something. I think there are bigger issues, and that we just try to keep things in perspective.
Yeah, but easier said than done.
Well, maybe I'm still looking for a therapist. We got this might be my therapy session.
Yeah, 15 more minutes. I mean, you know, I've lived in the area for over 20 years, and so I know that that constant conversation, which has never changed, right, is about change and how everything changes and how hard it is to make it and keep surviving. And but it really does feel like after the pandemic, getting through the pandemic, which was hard enough, and now with multiple wars and every, you know, right and left, things are more and more expensive. It's just like, it's just a beacon of hope to see you guys still there, really. Yeah, so I'm curious about the title.
Yeah, so there's a song at the end of the movie called On the Corner at the Center of the World. And it's a singer-songwriter, Morgan Clamp, out of Toronto, who I've been working with for, I've known him now for like 14 years. In my last documentary, he did the end credits song. And so the minute Tom and Jason approved, you know, me working on this documentary and telling their story, I called Morgan up and I pitched it to him. I said, I'd love for you to consider writing a song. And he's a total go-getter, and he immediately wrote the song. Now the story evolved, and there was one point where I wasn't even sure if I could use it because the movie had taken this total different direction. But then in editing, the tone started to shift back towards the end of the movie the way I intended it to, and it was perfect for the end credits. But when he, you know, that title is in the lyrics, and when I saw that, it caught me right away. And I said to him, you know, would you mind if maybe I use that as part of the title? He said, oh, yeah, whatever you want to do. And we'd gone through a couple different titles. At one point, it was called Meet Me at the Rainbow. There was like two or three different renditions. And then at the end of it, I came back to Veselka, the rainbow on the corner at the center of the world. And it's lengthy. You don't see it on the marquee. It's too long. But it's funny how many people love it and feel it's very lyrical. And I'll say, oh, well, funny enough, it connects to the song at the end of the movie.
Yeah, I think it's appropriate for who we are. Yeah. It kind of sums up what Veselka is.
Yeah, absolutely. You have been in this, definitely a hub and a center in downtown New York, for sure. I would say. So the film was finished. When did you, how did you decide it was finished and when?
The paint is still wet on the house. Like it literally was finished, what, 5 weeks ago? It's crazy. We premiered at Santa Barbara International Film Festival. And originally I had proposed to the guys that I'd be done and out in the world with it by like November even. And then it's just, you know, it's a smaller movie. I'm kind of a one-man band on a lot of the process. So I just said, you know, I'm going to need more time, but I always said we got to get it out before the commemorations. We talked about early February and other things, and then it was like kind of the true deadline would be when we released it, which was the day before the commemoration, which is Friday, February 23rd. And, you know, year two of the war mirrored what happened in year one, so there wasn't any reason in year two to kind of reopen up the edit. And I had been editing anyway all the way up till, you know, like October or thereabouts, and then we had all the finishing, like creation of music, visual effects, and that takes a really long time and a lot of back and forth. But just kind of jumping ahead for a sec, what was really wonderful is the movie opened in Ukraine first.
Oh.
So on February 22nd, it was in four cities across six cinemas in Ukraine. And it ran until they do their scheduling a little different, but they did 1 week, like Thursday to Thursday or Thursday to Wednesday. And in the theaters, I was told by Vitaly, whose dad actually went on opening night in Kyiv, he said that typically during the war, if you see 10 people plus in a theater, that's a huge amount of people at the cinema given the war. Mm. That opening night, he said there was like 60 to 70 people in the theater, and every night we basically had that number. And for me as a storyteller, obviously, you know, your goal is always to get as many people to see or hear your story. And for it to reach the core audience outside of New Yorkers, like, that means the world to me.
Sure, that's wonderful.
And I hope it has a big impact on them.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure it did and will.
Thank you.
I'm sure. And so what happens next with it, we hope?
Streaming, you know, Netflix, Disney Plus, Paramount, you know, Plus, any of these, you know, I have relationships with all of them in some capacity. And Netflix, my last documentary was on Netflix for many years, and Turner Classic Movies, and now Criterion Channel. So, you know, there's definitely going to be a home for it. It's just a question of timing, you mm-hmm. know, and how they're programming things. But I have no doubt the world will see it soon.
Yes, and that seems like it's been a great response already yeah. here in New York.
Yeah, it's people. I mean, I highly recommend to anyone listening, don't wait for streaming. Go see it with an audience. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that as like some sort of a sales maneuver. Like, it's a better movie than I thought I had. And you go and watch it with an audience, and they tell you how much they love it in like the subtlest ways, and then in moments you were not expecting to get a reaction, you get like the wildest reactions, from applause to huge amounts of laughter, and they're so in it. And so I really recommend seeing it with a big group of people. It's yeah. Yeah. something else.
That's so sweet. So I recommend doing the same. So Tom mm-hmm. and Jason, I'm curious if there's anything, now that you're at the end of the shooting process, mm-hmm. I know you're doing lots of press and stuff now, but if there was anything that surprised you or caught you off guard, you know, or something that you weren't expecting during the process.
I was a little surprised when the movie started. I'm sorry, when the war started, we got inundated with press. All the major press came the first few days of the war. And it kind of made me realize that Veselka is thought of as the center of Ukrainian community, the Ukrainian life in New York. And I kind of felt a pretty strong sense of responsibility also, that you know, people were looking to us to help, to come up with a solution, to suggest a solution. And then the outpouring of donations and support, and I mean it's still ongoing. We're still really busy for. I mean, some of the interest has dropped off, which is disturbing. But people are still coming out and showing support. And, we just hope this war ends favorably sometime soon.
I'm going to be selfish here and say I've never realized the camera adds the 20 pounds, as they say.
Maybe it's only supposed to be 10. Well, so
I got to eat less pierogies. I think that was the tell-all from my side. But no, I mean, jokingly, yeah, my takeaway. What was I surprised? I mean, you don't realize the familial relationships when you have when you work with family and you know, seeing, telling the story and realizing what we've been through and seeing it on the screen and realizing what my grandfather went through. Obviously, I'm most aware of the history, and then what my father went through and growing up in the business. You know, we might not have been as communicative as we could have been or should have been, but now that we're able to tell our story and him learning from him and still having him here to advise and to be part of this familial business for 70 years. I mean, I'm very grateful to that. And I just can't give enough credit to what my, you know, I say, Tom mentions at the end of the movie, I mean, I don't know, you know, what my grandfather would say if he saw what we are doing today, but I'm very fortunate to have role models of them too. I only wish that I can fill those shoes.
Ah, very nice. Yeah, I think most important stories are very, very powerful and healing for everybody involved, for the audience and for the main characters.
And if I could mm-hmm. add to what you were just saying, what you know, I learned obviously so much about the three generations as we were together. And to me, it's like each person was the right person for each era of the business. Each, you know, whether it was the detail-oriented Tom or the community leader in Vladimir, you know, bringing the people together in the neighborhood. And then you have Jason, who's like this surrogate dad and brother to so many people, but also is detail-oriented by the training of his dad. So it's like, you know, and the backdrop for each scenario was perfect for who each
and
the timing. And I think that's what's given it longevity. It was, you know, the right men at the right era each step of the way.
Can I ask you, I know this might be a giveaway, but I thought it was a very perfect, sweet last shot?
Oh, yeah.
How did you decide on that? How did that happen? And could you describe it?
Sure. So, you know, we introduce Jason's daughter, Sophia.
That shot you're talking about?
Yeah. she appears a few times in Act One. And, you know, even Jason comments at times, sort of paralleling his, you know, youth with his dad. Like, you know, he says, I'm here so much, I don't see my daughter as much as I'm, you know, here at the restaurant. And so, you know, when he was 13, Jason comes to the restaurant, starts working. Well, his daughter is now 13. And so at the end of the movie, the phone rings after the end credits. And you hear her say, I'll get it, Poppy. And she picks up the phone. It reveals her, and she picks up the phone. She says, just as Jason does earlier in the movie, hello, this is Vizelka, how may I help you? And then she passes it over to her dad. So it teases the maybe the next generation of, you know, when we do the sequel 30 years from now.
Well, and the premise was all along a homage to my father, and maybe, you know, maybe this will be an opening for my daughter to maybe create something 30 years or whenever, maybe not 30 years, 20 years down the line.
Yeah, yeah.
Sophia, no pressure.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, she is a theater buff, so she loved being a part of this project.
Good. Yeah. Well, I'm glad we could end it on a happy note.
Yeah.
So tell us where to see it, for how much longer, what we hope, where else we can see it. And what's up.
So in New York, it's at the Village East, just 3 blocks from Vizelk on 12th Street and 2nd Avenue. In Los Angeles at the Lemley NoHo 7. In New Jersey at the Burnsville Cinema 3. And this week is a big weekend because, you know, it's very rare for small movies like this to get a second week, which we did, which is amazing. But if we can have a really great tonight, tomorrow, Sunday, you know, we could get a third week.
Okay.
So everybody come out. Don't wait. Everybody always says, oh, wait for streaming. Don't wait for streaming.
You want to see this on a big screen.
Yeah, you want to see
with
it on
the group.
Big screen. Yeah.
Yes, all right. Sure. Fingers crossed.
Oh, and also we should add, actually, they're running a great promotion, if I can mention this.
Please.
If you bring your ticket to the theater, you get $5 off your meal.
To the restaurant.
What did I say?
Theater.
We're not serving. You're not serving food at the theater. Yeah, you have to go back to the restaurant with your ticket. You get $5 off, and then you guys, if you want to talk about your.
We created a special menu, a set menu, something similar to what during restaurant week. There's a prefix for $30. You get an appetizer, an entree, and a choice of a dessert for $30. We're calling it a movie menu set price. So until next week, until the end of the run of the movie. The doc, we're going to offer this menu. So,
fantastic.
No, you have a great excuse to come for a bite either before or after and then see the movie.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good luck
you.
With it all.
Thank you so much.
And thanks for a beautiful story and all the, I'll keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Thank you.